You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans? We are headbanging on a victory Monday. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report for 24/7 Sports, Ross Uglum. And joining me after a little victory lunch on a Monday, number 57 in your programs, number one in your hearts, and the owner, co-owner of Big Deck Barbecue Company, our presenting sponsor, Zach Willis. That was quite an introduction. I just about I just about passed out there. Goodness. But how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Nothing sweeter than a semifinal victory Monday. You know, these guys are getting ready. They're doing winter camp. It basically turns into how hard can we grind the young guys? Let everybody catch their legs up. But there's nothing better than these 3 weeks leading up to arguably the best weekend of the year. So looking forward to it. We're headed back to Frisco.
Yeah, I'd love to do like a 5,000 word piece. I think write a book is correct. Because I don't think anybody read it, but like a real, real deep dive into winter camp and some of the gains made developmentally while the old guys rest their legs.
Yeah.
Because it's literally time that the rest of the country is not permitted to have contact, but you have earned this time by virtue of being in the national championship game. And it's an advantage that North Dakota State has literally had. What is it now, 9 of the last 11 years?
Yeah, you think about if a guy's there for 5 years, it's an extra 20 weeks of practice he gets under his belt compared to everybody else in the country. It's definitely a formula that they have drawn up, and it works. It's kind of weird to me that, you know, obviously other people can't necessarily follow this formula because the NCAA won't let them, but Kramer would always say that we're going to practice football as long as the NCAA let us, and most of the time that meant till the first weekend of January. So the phenomenon of winter camp really is just like something that would be fun to deep dive, you know, get Trev on here, get Ben on here, let all these guys talk about their experiences.
Let's effort that. Maybe a podcast before the 10,000 word article, get some former guys on here talking about winter camp during winter camp while there is no football to break down.
Yeah. Okay. A little bit of content for the people.
Look at us, working
live for the listener. They're like, we don't want to listen to this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Montana State beats South Dakota State and sets up Frisco, sets up Vegan v. Bison. Very, very interesting stuff. You know, South Dakota State, look, I'll give credit where credit's due. I still think on a neutral field, they're the second best team in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, I know, like, our guy Jeremy Jorgensen was out there with his Montana State receipts.
Yeah.
But, like, on a neutral field where all things are equal, I think South Dakota State beats them 7 or 8 out of 10 times. However, it wasn't a neutral field.
Yeah.
That was earned. South, don't lose three games.
Right.
Don't lose three games. And you're talking about a team that played a ton of games. They had more COVID cancellations than some schools in the spring. But, you know, they played a ton of games.
Yep.
Made it all the way. Did they win the national championship in the spring?
No.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. But, you know, they played a ton of games and then played a ton more games because of the three losses, had to play on Thanksgiving at home,
yeah.
Then had to go way out west, then had to go way out east,
yeah.
And then went up to the mountains. And you can make that excuse. And honestly, as much as I'd like to like make fun of Bunny fans for making excuses, like that's pretty darn legit.
Yeah. I mean, like my dad even pointed that out to me before the Friday night game, and it was something I hadn't even thought about, but they played in all like four different time zones over the course of the playoffs.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that definitely puts a toll on guys. And, you know, we talk about home field advantage and we think about the dome and like having that raucous home environment, whatever. The big part of home field advantage is that you don't have to leave your own bed for the entire length of the playoffs.
I want to put my feet up here. I want to take just a quick unscripted sidebar.
Sure.
Real briefly. We are in, and we're going to do something a little bit different because we had Quinn Allo, Brian Sean, a couple other luminaries.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to move from a 12-team league to a 14-team league next year. And I think we're going to do like seven celebrities. And I am using the word celebrity extremely loosely. It's like you were at Sickies when they called me a celebrity guest picker.
Yeah.
I was a little uncomfortable. But we're going to do like seven former players, media member, whatever, and then seven fans.
That'd be fun.
And I think that's going to be the plan for next year. But right now, it is just a raucous group chat of all the guys that are in the Bison Report Fantasy League right now. Are you in the semifinals?
I'm in the consolation.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm glad that's so funny.
If you haven't figured that out, I am in the semifinals against Trev.
Go Trev.
Rude. Anyway, I posed this question to the group, and I want to pose it to you. Not even a question, more of like an idea. South Dakota State just lost four games.
Mm-hmm.
Two of those losses at home, I think. Where was the
SIU and?
Well, okay, so they lost to SIU at home.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to UNI at home and lost to South Dakota there.
Correct.
So it is.
Yes.
It's just two home losses.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make and that I made to the group was South Dakota State just proudly announced an extension for head coach John Stiglmeyer. They lost their offensive coordinator to Idaho, which I guess for these purposes is kind of irrelevant, but something we probably should include in the news anyway, because Eck has been a thorn in NDSU's side for a while.
He's going to turn into a thorn in SDSU's side here pretty shortly.
If he starts ripping assistant coaches?
That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. Not only that, what if Mr. Gronowski hops in that portal with him? Then what?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but because
shout out to Jordan Finkston. He's the one who asked me about this.
Because Idaho is still FCS.
Sure.
So I just don't know if in the next 3 years you can make a pitch that,
hey, do you want to, I'm going to make people mad.
Okay.
And say that SDSU to Idaho is a lateral move.
not OC to HC though. I don't think.
I'm just saying for Gronowski.
Oh, I don't think it's a lateral move at all. I think it's a backwards move.
I don't think so. They might lose 4 to 5 games next year.
Okay.
A lot of dudes leaving. If assistant coaches start leaving, I don't know. It's just not shaping up well for the longevity of the Jackrabbit program right now.
We're having an off-season podcast in the middle of the non-off-season. I'm gonna reel
you. Started it.
I know. I'm going to reel you back in. I'm going to reel us back in. The point that I am really, really trying to make, and I'm going to make it here without any more pauses, is imagine a world in which Matt Entz loses four games, and one of them being the playoffs. Matt Entz loses two home games, loses four games total in a season, and Matt Larson proudly announces an extension for Matt Entz. Imagine that world.
I mean, think about the reaction from Bison Twitter, man. Like, we were undefeated. People wanted people fired. Like, I can't imagine that exact scenario, because when you really broke it down like that for us in the group chat, I was like, that is unbelievable. It's like, for someone who touts themselves as being like as high and mighty like NDA or FCS dynasty like SDSU does, and then they go and extend Stig after that, man, like, it's a tough look.
It's a tough look.
Yeah.
And you know, it always reminds me of Coach Kleiman, and I love Chris, and he would tell the story of being in Hornbachers and the 2016 season, the first year that Stick started.
Mm-hmm.
you lose, you go 11-1, and then you lose a quarterfinal game to James Madison.
Right.
And the sweet old lady Hornbacher's tells you, I'm sorry about the tough year.
Yeah.
And Chris is like, God damn, this place isn't like any other place.
It's the same thing like my last year playing. Like, we lost to Sam Houston, and people are like, oh, man, congrats. Like, sorry for the... We went to the playoffs. We lost to the eventual national champions, man. Like, any other team in the country is begging for a year like this.
Right.
That is funny. I love that little anecdote from Coach K.
Anyway, folks, buy the Zeb t-shirts. They're hilarious.
Yeah.
Just if you don't know what you're looking for, just go on Twitter and search for the Zeb t-shirts. They're amazing.
The One Last Ride. It's so good. Shout out that guy, like, because they did the Captain Andrew Luck one, obviously, when he was still playing.
Right.
And it got so overplayed. You have to do it correctly. And that guy killed it with the Zebulai, the Colonel Zebulai.
Okay. Injuries. Just kind of a quick recap and stuff. So we'll go with kind of what we know, which isn't that much, unless Zach would like to share some insider information.
I don't have any.
That's fair. So Nash tries, can't go. He's expected to be totally fine for Frisco.
Yeah.
Jalen Bussey in a funny scooter, Gindy in a funny scooter. I don't know. So we kind of know what Gindy's deal is.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be week 5 for him. Post-surgery, that game?
Yeah.
That's aggressive.
Yeah, and especially if it's something that would, like, put next year in peril. Like, it's... If they go out and say, like... putting myself in Gindy's shoes, obviously NFL in my future, unless they say it's 100%, I will not re-injure it in the championship game, I'm sitting out until next year.
Yeah, and I think I would put a 20% chance for Gindy.
Yeah.
And that might be optimistic.
I think that's fair.
Bussey, I don't actually know enough about what that was.
Lower leg of some sort. I know he had a boot on, right?
Sure. So
ankle, maybe. Who knows?
I'm not real optimistic about that, but yeah. I don't know the injury like I know Gindy's injury.
Right.
So I'm not going to make a tremendous comment on that. C-Dub, he's playing. Period.
It seemed like the Watson family said that Christian was playing.
Exactly. Ganella out of the boot. That one's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because if you're out of a boot for an ankle and you have 3 weeks to prepare, which he does, I think there's a chance there.
That I would put that at like a 90% we see Dom in Frisco.
Interesting. I am slightly more pessimistic than that just because Dom has baseball.
Sure.
You know, and so I would feel like the Diamondbacks would probably prefer he not
sure,
you know what, but not test it.
Right. I feel like that line's been drawn in the sand though, of like when you're playing football, your priority is football.
Sure.
And I understand where you're looking. Like the Diamondbacks have made a considerable investment into Mr. Ganella to be a good player for them as well. But just like going through ankle sprains myself, once you get out of the boot, like then it's just all dealing with the pain. And you know, he was in it for such a long time that to see him out of it, we were like visibly shocked when we saw that he's out of the boot against JMU. So,
And then Sundell was in street clothes, and that one I don't know anything about. I mean, I would assume it was knee again.
Yeah.
I don't know. And you know, as we've mentioned, like they don't miss a beat with Westy.
No. Yeah. I think that's the one where like you're less worried about somebody stepping up in those positions.
Yeah.
I think it was the knee. He had a knee brace on the sideline.
Okay.
Just from judging from that. I don't know severity. I don't know what got hurt. All I know is it was knee again. So,
let's see. Other than that, just a programming note. We'll be doing a hoops. People probably looking for maybe, because as you probably saw on Bison Report, I clipped, you know, what we were able to find from that Pacific game. Nate did a great job covering the Pacific game while the JMU semifinal.
Shout out to Nate.
We're not stupid. We understand like where North Dakota State fans' priorities were that night.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, there've been a lot of head scratching moments this year for basketball. I think the blowout losses in Omaha and Tucson. Well, folks, Creighton just beat Villanova by 20 at home.
Is that good or bad?
That's good. And Arizona might be the number one team in the country.
Right.
So I'm not excusing the performances, but all of a sudden, they're 8-4.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I mean, I think, you know, the one game that will always stick with these guys is probably UNLV.
Sure.
The chance to be 9-3.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's probably the one.
And against a higher mid-major, would you consider them high major?
Yeah. I mean, they're mid-major in the sense that they play in the Mountain West, but they're high major in the sense that in my lifetime, they've won a national championship.
Right, it's UNLV.
Right. So anyway, we will be doing a Hoops podcast between now and UND where Nate and I fully break down the win over Pacific and fully preview UND and probably dabble in a little bit of a Summit League preview now that we've seen Summit League non-conference play, especially very interesting starts from a USD team we didn't think was going to be very good, from a Western Illinois team we didn't think was going to be very good, and from a St. Thomas team that we kind of thought was all Division III players and sort of in a period of transition. So we'll be breaking that all down. Something else to break down is that wonderful, wonderful menu at Herd and Horns, now a sponsor of the show. We really appreciate Brent and their GM as well for kind of getting in the saddle and riding with us. But, man, like we saw him on Friday night right before the game, and he kind of encompasses the energy there of Herd and Horns. And what a great place. I imagine, you know, folks were there for the game, but we talked about it too. Like, that's just a place to go. It's so versatile. Like the game room, you take the kids there, no problem. You want to go with the buddies for casual beer, great. You want to let it fly?
Yeah.
Great. Buddy,
it checks all the boxes. I've done all three.
Exactly. So, you know, shout out to Herd and Horns. We appreciate the menu. You're a big Herd and Horns burger guy.
Hey, I am a burger guy. I mean, the wings are fantastic. And by the way, like, it's hard to find a good wing in this town. So once you do, you cling to your spots, and Herd and Horns has some good chicken wings.
What's your go-to for the chicken wings?
I'm just a barbecue guy, man. That might come as a shock to people, but just a traditional barbecue. I love buffalo. Also, if you eat your wings with ranch, get out of my face. Blue cheese with the wings, no matter what. So that's my piece to contribute to this whole thing about Herd and Horns.
I'm going to give you, do you know how I consume wings?
Let's go.
Nothing.
Really?
I'm of the religion that whatever sauce these wings were spun in is what the Lord intended them to taste like. So, like, if you're giving me a barbecue sauce wing, I want to taste a barbecue sauce wing. I don't want to taste what a barbecue sauce wing tastes like dipped in something else.
Sure.
Especially if it's trash like ranch dressing.
Stop it. People just shut the podcast up.
Anyway, shout out Herd and Horns for sure. We've got some grievances, some stuff to go on. And this is something that I guess I've discussed, but we got some takes to get off, I guess, is maybe more accurately what this is.
Excuse me?
I cannot take one more second of people acting like this is the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Right.
Like, South Dakota State has gotten so much more of a piece of NDSU than JMU.
Yeah.
UNI has more NDSU pelts on the wall.
Yeah. I hate Southern Illinois more than I hate JMU right now.
JMU won a game.
Right.
That's what they did in this rivalry. They won a game.
And, like, there were more important games that NDSU won in this rivalry. So, we beat them in two national championships. So what is the argument about this semifinal thing making it a rivalry?
Exactly. I mean, that was I believe that loss was a quarterfinal loss. Was it a semifinal loss?
Semis, yeah.
Okay. So, it was a semifinal loss. Still, you've got a quarterfinal loss back in the day when NDSU was building the program.
Sure.
You've got a semifinal loss last night, and you got two go-the-hell-homes in Frisco.
Right.
This is not a rivalry. This is not no. When one team wins 80% of the games, it's not a rivalry.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's not a regional rivalry. They're from the East Coast. This was not a rivalry. This was a team that won a game, and then the media tried to make them out to be the other FCS power.
It's not like none of the the animosity I have towards JMU comes from the field. I have two rings because of them. So, I mean, like, who am I to be like, you know, whatever, they beat us. I wasn't here for the semifinal loss. I was not on the football team. Like I said, won two rings off of them. But the media and their fans, man, like, they just drive me absolutely nuts. And that's what this whole segment is about. So,
And, you know, building off of that, too, there's a lot of stuff going on, and we instigated a little. I mean, I'm not going to say we didn't, but a lot of it was legit. I mean, we were just going through, like, talking points and stuff like that, and I think the biggest instigator, obviously, was when their wide receiver, the good one, Wells, who's a stud, mm-hmm. and will continue to be a stud at the FBS level, I think, you know, went online and was like, this isn't a TUD. And it was a picture where the bottom of his foot is cropped out and his knee is clearly not on the ground.
Yeah.
And so there was a great angle that ESPN had that I slowed down and then I screen grabbed, because you can see like the Nike on his shoe mm-hmm. is very clear until it hits the ground and vibrates. And right. then it becomes very unclear because that's what happens at impact. And it's clearly out of bounds. It might even come down after his knee comes down, which is on the other side of the white line.
Which means it's not a touchdown, which was the point you made to me, because we were kind of cut off from the press, like looking at it from the press box. I was like, they're not going to look at that.
Yeah.
And you're like, his knee landed 8 yards out of bounds. What are they going to look at? And then I, like, just for my blood pressure's sake and like my own mental health, I don't look at the Bison Report mentions a lot, but
fair enough.
The one I did peek at was like, well, our grief was that it wasn't even reviewed. If the ref sees it was out of bounds, there's no reason to review it.
Right, and especially if reviews are coming from the booth and they're like, this is not a touchdown, next.
Right. It's grasping at straws, like, because they thought, I mean, we can get into this too, but like, it's just the whole culture of how they play is that nobody beats us.
Comes from the top.
Yeah, exactly.
Comes from the top.
Nobody beats us.
You just play poorly.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And that devolved into, you know, what you're going to hear from Sam Houston State fans, what you're going to hear from James Madison fans, what you're going to hear from every fan that is on their way to a very, very low-level FBS conference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was getting into with people is like, yes, NDSU fans, NDSU administration, even NDSU coaches have had discussions about the next level.
Mm-hmm.
However, we have also, and I specifically have had conversations about very much wanting to avoid a situation like the MAC or like the Sun Belt,
right?
Where there is nothing to play for there.
Right. And you go, like, let's say you have a 9-3, a good FBS season, right? Like, you win your conference, and then what?
You go to the New Orleans Bowl or the Cure Bowl.
Are people like just as excited for that as they are for Frisco? I mean, we have this whole conversation about, are people excited or are they bored with Bison football? Is there going to be 15,000 of us flying to Shreveport to watch us in late
the
December?
Camellia Bowl?
Right.
I don't know. And right. that's the question. But that was the whole point that I was making was Bison fans are trying to get at least in a conference where they have a chance to be a top mid-major program, at least get into the Mountain West where if you become Boise State, you can get maybe not to where Cincinnati got this year, but you can get in the conversation. You can start talking about potentially these guys talking about a New Year's Six. Ain't nobody going to the New Year's Six.
No. And like, even UCF was AAC. That's still a better conference than either of these conferences.
Yeah.
And all this Mountain West is the only thing that moves the needle for me, obviously, unless like the Big 12 calls, which I think is kind of unrealistic as of now.
And I mean, I think just the already spread out nature of the AAC, I could be definitely talked into the AAC.
Sure.
But
yeah. And the other thing is too, like, the Mountain West excites me too for that exact reason, in the fact that the playoff expansion is happening in the FBS, and it's going to be sooner than later, where either it's 8 and every Power 5 gets an automatic, every Power 5 champion gets an auto bid, and then the rest are left up for the G5, or it goes to 12, top 2 from every Power 5, and then there's two at-large for everybody else. There's absolutely an opportunity for an undefeated, dominant Mountain West champion to get into the college football playoff.
Right. Right. And my thing is, like, I'm not even of the opinion, and this is not a shocking one, I am of the opinion that if you go to FBS, you have seen NDSU's last national championship, and you have probably seen NDSU's last opportunity at a national championship. And I know that might be tough for some people to hear, but I think it's just reality. I think that's what you're doing. And honestly, that's fine. I don't think anybody at Toledo thinks that the Rockets are winning the Natty ever.
Right.
I don't think anybody, you know, even with the Houston Cougars, like, I don't think Houston thinks they're ever winning. Maybe they do, but they're not.
No. I mean, the only hope would be, like, honestly, I think Cincinnati's going to get stomped this year. Like there's a clear line of demarcation of how this thing goes, and acting like the Sun Belt and
Okay. Last couple of things with the Sun Belt, and then we'll move on to a different grievance. Here are the Sun Belt champions. So I'm talking about Coastal Carolina or App State or like literally who won the league, not where I think JMU will slot in, which is third in the league, fifth in the league, fourth in the league. Oh, we lost a bunch of kids, sixth in the league.
Right.
Like, there's some programs, Coastal, App, Lafayette. Like, there's so here is where the league champion of the Sun Belt has played after the season is done. 2015, Camellia Bowl. 16, Cure Bowl. 17, New Orleans Bowl. 18, shout out to Dollar General, the Dollar General Bowl. 19, New Orleans Bowl. 20, Myrtle Beach. Now, I would go down a week early and play golf.
Right. You're not excited for the football game.
Right, yeah. 21, Cure Bowl.
By the way, which they just got stomped in. Yeah. The Sun Belt champion.
So there's no New Year's Six.
No.
Stop talking about New Year's Six.
You're actually delusional if you think a Sun Belt champ, JMU, makes it into a New Year's Six game.
And here's another thing. Enjoy FCS and the 9:30 games on ESPN News. That was a parting shot. Here's the deal. Georgia State finished what I would consider fourth in the Sun Belt. They had the fourth best record. The Sun Belt split into two divisions, and that won't change with adding more teams. They'll still split it into divisions. The fourth best team in the Sun Belt, which is where JMU would have been slotted this year. I don't know as though they would have done that well. I think their computer rankings are based off of playing a trash CAA.
Right.
Which the CAA is and was, specifically this year, trash. Here's the TV schedule for Georgia State, the fourth place finisher in the Sun Belt. ESPNU, ESPN Plus, ESPN Plus, the SEC Network because of the team that they were playing.
Right.
ESPN Plus, ESPN 3, ESPN Plus, ESPN Plus, ESPN Plus, ESPN on a Thursday. By the way, that's also because of who they were playing in Louisiana Lafayette actually being a good football team.
Sure.
ESPN 3, ESPN Plus.
Some real primetime stuff there.
North Dakota State has played more games on the true ESPN family of networks this year.
Yeah.
And then when they go to the Natty, they'll even eclipse that.
Right.
This is not, if you're talking about obscurity, you're going to be just as obscure, if not more, in the Sun Belt.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. And that's the whole, like, nucleus of this conversation is, would you rather be Big Pond Little Fish or Little Pond Big Fish, right?
Right.
And we see where JMU chose to go, and I really think NDC biding their time and waiting for the right moment rather than rushing into it is going to pay dividends. But acting like it's some step up to go to the Sun Belt FBS where you're going to be fifth in Group A, like, super cool, guys. Congrats on that. Have fun with that.
I have a question for you, Zach.
Yeah.
Did the spring season happen?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
As far as I remember, yeah. I don't want to remember it, but yes.
I tell you what, though, the lack of credence that we showed it, I think, has really been shown out.
Yeah. Especially with the national champion in the spring getting on here and complaining about playing 22 games in a calendar year.
Right. Like, as soon as we got back to fall football, everybody acted like themselves.
Right.
UND stunk.
Yep.
South Dakota State won their Super Bowl by beating NDSU and lost four other games, including the game before the game where they always used to lose.
Yeah, they went SDSU, full SDSU.
Sam Houston State got waxed in the playoffs. They went full Sam Houston State.
Shocking.
And who's going to Frisco?
The Bison. Weird.
It almost, like I said, almost like spring football is some bullshit.
Right.
What are you going to do?
I mean, it's when everybody else is practicing during the, congrats. I don't know.
All right. We're going to go at one of our own. I have one more grievance. This is with Twitter user at Corfrere.
This crosses both of us.
Yeah, I know. It was constantly in our mentions during the first half of the regular season. We just want an apology. Okay. This is somebody who was consistently asking for offensive staff, specifically the offensive coordinator, to be fired. I'm talking about this one specifically on October 27th. 2020 was the year we really started to see a shift in play calling. Roles, game plan, or lack thereof is not getting it done. Something needs to change because this won't get them past the first playoff game. Not only was this a terrible take then, it looks even worse now.
Right.
Tyler Roll coordinated the first year of Trey Lance, undefeated national championship season, was dealt a crappy hand in the spring, was dealt a quarterback situation that was untenable, and then once the quarterback situation resolved itself this spring, went absolutely nuclear.
Looks like 19 again.
Then lost their NFL wide receiver, honestly the guy who the offense was based around,
right,
reinvented the offense with the quarterback that was having the struggles,
right,
used him to reinvent the offense and win every game by at least a touchdown in the playoffs on the way to Frisco, where they will, by the way, be heavy favorites. Sorry.
Old takes exposed?
Yeah, like, sorry.
Yeah, give us our flowers. I don't even want the apology. You apologize to Coach T-Roll. That's who you apologize
keep,
to.
Keep your apology.
Yeah.
Keep your apology and send it to Tyler. We don't need it.
Yeah.
I kind of need it. Zach doesn't need it.
You're big time petty, though, so you need it.
Big time.
I don't. Water off my back, buddy. I mean, we're going into Christmas season. This is full big deck time, and we're going to take some time to relax. We're going to go to Frisco. We're going to go to Nashville. We're going to go to D.C. The whole squad is going to enjoy the year that it was, and we're excited for a big 2022. After that first week, we come back from Frisco. We're hitting the ground running, start big deck up again. Put your orders in. As long as Ross will keep me on this podcast, I will keep saying that promo code Ross gets you 10% off. So if you see us in Frisco, come say what's up. Got nothing else for you. We're not selling anything. Just good vibes. So come say what's up. Promo code Ross, 10%.
All right. I want to start this off, the JMU recap, with something that I find a little bit interesting. And that's that the guys at PFF College that do all the charting, and I definitely get it. But if you look at Cam Miller's season, this was actually the highest graded game that he had outside of Missouri State.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to break that down just because I thought that was super interesting as far as, like, the box score just doesn't say super elite stuff.
Right.
You know, but here's why. He had two what they grade as big-time throws. So a big-time throw, let's see if they have it really explained here. A pass with excellent ball location and timing, generally thrown further down the field and or into a tighter window. So he had two big time throws in the game. Here's where I'm impressed. Okay, two drops. So you adjust his completion percentage to 63.2% with an ADOT, which is an average depth of throw of 11.7 yards down the field, and he picked up eight first downs.
Yeah.
He picked up eight first downs and it, on 10 completions,
right,
with two drops. My guy.
Good. I mean, that's like all you can ask for from an efficient, like, domination quarterback. And he deserves that highest ranking of the year because I was really, really impressed with Cam. And that's kind of like, you'll get a bunch of old heads listening to you talk about the PFF numbers, like rolling their eyes and like maybe muting the radio. But there's stuff in there that really does make sense. If you take out Cam, 12 of 19, 165 and two TDs, that's a way better stat line, honestly, than 10 of 19, 165 and two touchdowns. And then you add in factors of guys watching the game, breaking it down and seeing, oh, I mean, great timing.
Yeah.
Nothing in a box score is going to tell you he picked up eight first downs on 10 completions. So hey, that's huge.
Let's talk about this absolute filth from my guy. When blitzed, 8 of 12 for 107 yards and a snack.
Nasty.
Nasty. And then you talk about passing depth, a 90-plus grade on deep passing, 3 of 6 with two big-time throws, 3 of 6 for 83 yards when attempting the pass more than 20 yards down the field, with obviously the tug to young Hunter Lipke, who we're going to talk about here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And converting 3 first downs for an NFL passer rating on deep balls of 135.4.
Good or bad?
Woo!
Shout out Cam Miller. He's really playing really well. I mean, you send me clips of stuff like that. You know more about quarterback play than me. You know, like just his poise and his composure, and to be able to throw against the blitz like that, man. I mean, he's playing like a real, real gamer right now.
Cam Miller at this level, getting C-Dub back with the Quincy Patterson. Scary stuff.
Oh my God. I'm going to walk out of this studio.
Oh, you got to love the board. Shout out, Rodecaster. All right. Cole Johnson's worst game of the season. Folks.
Wonder why.
Folks. When the season is done, we're able to access, or I'm at least able to access through a scouting service, the All 22. That is some special stuff. That pick by Dawson Weber. I cannot express to you. So what happens here, Zach, is you're showing too high. Middle of the field open defense means the post should be the throw.
Mm-hmm.
NDSU rolls that coverage with Dawson single high, yeah. Middle of the field closed. The slot over, I don't like to, because I was a marginal athlete.
Yeah.
I am now a poor athlete.
Yeah.
Okay. People that have watched the Big Deck Barbecue Tailgate Show, that's confirmed.
Yeah.
Although pickleball, I just...
It's all man sport. I just abused you. That's your bag.
That's fair. I'm hitting that throw for 6.
Yeah.
100%, I'm hitting that throw for 6.
The widest open human being I've ever seen in my life.
So they run it over from the slot with a post behind it. Very popular concept.
And like... Great play call against
yes.
a disguised coverage to go to cover 3.
Absolutely.
And just, boy, did he miss the read.
Cole Johnson never moves his head off of his outside receiver, the guy playing the number 1, and Dawson Weber could have fair caught that thing.
And I mean, like, that's the true separation of good versus great college quarterbacks, right? Is like being able to, okay, you see cover 2 before the snap. Now what happens after the snap? And like, he put up these gaudy numbers and stuff, but at one point, I think he was like 12 of 15 or something like that, like very efficient. And then I looked, it was like 4 yards per pass average. And I'm like, this guy is not doing anything that's world beating.
Yeah.
He threw that pick, man. I was like, this guy is not all everybody cracked him up to be.
Yeah. He had an A dot of 6.8. It just wasn't much. You know, he didn't push the ball downfield, ended up going 25 for 34, but for 6.2 an attempt, he had 210 yards on 41 dropbacks.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's not great. It wasn't great. And then, you know, I get it, and I'm not going to really put the Destin thing on him. And I'm going to give it to the crowd. Shout out the crowd.
Yeah.
He said to us in the post-game press conference, my O-line did not hear my protection call.
Right.
Therefore, they turned a defensive tackle loose, and I was trying to throw the ball away, and I didn't throw it far enough because Destin has those bunnies.
I was going
to
say, you won't do it, but I will. Buddy, you are trash if you can't. If you throw a pick trying to throw a ball away,
yeah,
that's not great. What are we doing here? Like, I'd expect you, man. Like, the petty king talking about this. Like,
I'm
part of that, like you said, I don't know how many other dudes in the country are picking that ball off.
Sure.
But throw it 4 rows deep if you're going to try to throw it away. But, I mean, yeah, shout out to Bison Nation, man. If you can't hear the protection, you're completely lost out there. Shout out to Javi getting the pressure.
Yes.
And then, you know, everybody's seen it by now, DT money.
Let's talk a little bit critical, I guess, before we get into the rest of the game, which will be mostly positive. I mean, it was a 20-14 game. This was not a red-letter day.
Yeah.
You know, it was not a dominant performance. Here are your non-Hunter run game stats. Cam Miller, 8 for 24 because he had a 4-yard loss. So 8 for 24 for 3.0 yards per carry. Tamarick Williams, who had been an absolute stone-cold stud all playoffs, 8 carries, 19 yards, 2.4 a carry. QP, 4 carries, 13 yards, 3.3 a carry. And finally, Kobe Johnson, 4 carries, 8 yards, 2.0 a carry. What did you see from the non-Lipke run game that was just honestly struggling?
You saw what their game plan was trying to, they knew Christian was out. They know Gindorf's out. It was make them one-dimensional, take the run away, make Cam Miller beat you by throwing it. And honestly, if you get any worse of a performance from Cam, who also, like I'm just saying, Cam gamed out, went full baller mode. If you don't get that performance from Cam, I think we're sitting here talking on a non-victory Monday.
We're talking on a sad Monday.
Right, because the way they shut down the run game, you just those, obviously, like you said, disregard Big Dyke Barbecue athlete Hunter Lipke, and look at the rest of the numbers. You look at the rest of the numbers. I mean, you see what the game plan was, and they did it effectively. There's not a lot you can do sometimes when their main focus is to stop the run game, and they're doing it well. It just kind of turned out that Lipke and everybody else started to hurt him in the pass game. You're right.
Speaking of Hunter.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
Dude. That's how I knew. Okay, this guy might be all right.
19 carries, 114 yards, averaging 5.8 a carry. Highest graded overall player on the Bison for the game. 3 catches, 89 yards, and 2. He went Kyle Juszczyk on everybody's ass. More than 200 yards of offense by himself.
And there's stuff that Hunter does that you can't even quantify in the run game. Just as him as a blocker and how valuable he is. But how nasty of him, man. 3 of 89 with 2 touchdowns. And these aren't like layup go get it balls either. These are nice catches that he's becoming a legit well-rounded weapon.
Like, rest in peace. We love you, Tyler Jangula. This was not Tyler Jangula in the flat rumble for a 3-yard touchdown.
Right.
Like, this was, I'm running a wheel on your ass.
Yeah, legit looked like Kyle Juszczyk. It was just at a point where it was, he's lined up in the eye, Hunter's getting 6.
The more I think about this game, put the Lipke statue next to the DT statue.
Yeah, both of them.
All right. Anyway, Quincy, catch the ball.
Yeah.
I love you, but
catch the ball.
They had been marinating that steak. I mean, that thing.
dude had his touchdown celebration ready and everything. Like, he was thinking of it all as he was about to catch that ball. And it's just.
They had the garlic salt, cloves. I mean, they had the rub. That had been in the fridge for 3 days. And.
Nasty play design. Shout out.
And honestly, you know, you talk about this game getting close late.
Yeah.
That's a FU go home touchdown.
That's a big time tuck your tail and leave a touchdown. We threw it to our backup quarterback.
Yeah.
And he scored on it.
Go home.
Go have fun in the Sun Belt.
I think the offense, though, you know, still yearning for CW. You talk about and we are, you know, shout out DJ Hart, man. 8 snaps, 4 routes, and one of them is the long catch by a receiver. Stay on your feet, young man. But other than that,
right.
A great play.
Hell of a play.
On a deep over. 1 catch, 26 yards. But, I mean, that's kind of the issue, right? No C-Dub. Okay, well, what did the wide receivers do? You got DJ Hart 1 for 26, Phoenix 2 for 19, Rajah 2 for 17 with a bad drop, and Braylon 1 for 4. By the way, Babbo, who should have been kind of unlocked and unleashed with no Gindy, 1 catch, 10 yards.
Yeah, and all you can ask for from those guys is everybody needs to step up and catch the ball when it's thrown to them. So if you're going to get one target, you need to have one catch for 25 yards. So shout out to DJ, man. All the stuff those guys do in the run game and setting everything else up, it really does go unnoticed sometimes just from my perspective. It really is impressive that these young guys really buy in and try to make this offense run as well as it does.
And you have to have tremendous buy-in on the, you know, in the sense of we're talking about 43 rushes
right
in a win. Cam had 16 dropbacks, man. Mm-hmm. Or what am I looking at here? Oh, no, that's kept clean. Total. Cam had 22 dropbacks. 19 of those 22 dropbacks resulted in throws, and 10 of those were completed, like we said, with two drops.
Yeah.
So there, you complain about these numbers, or I did, I guess, with these wide receivers. You're still only talking about 22 dropbacks against 43 runs. It's not like everybody's going to get six targets.
Right.
It just doesn't work like that.
Also, like, how many other receiver rooms in the country are going to sit here and celebrate, not only celebrate, like hype their guy up when it's a fullback catching 3 for 89 and 2 touchdowns?
Right.
They want the ball too. Just the culture that this program has, and this goes into a much larger, like 10,000 foot view of what makes this place special. But shout out to those guys. They're literally doing their 111th when they're on the field. And if that equals 10 targets or zero targets, they're just as happy if they come out with a win.
All right. Destin Talbert, he was the highest graded defender for North Dakota State. And I want people to understand, this is a point we've made before with PFF College's grading, is that he can only get the plus two for the pick.
Right.
So he had 42 overall snaps. They're still grading all 42 snaps. Mm-hmm. So, yes, he gets a big, huge plus for the pick. But we're still talking about a down-out, down-in, down-out domination. Four targets on 42 snaps, two catches allowed for 18 yards. He broke up one and obviously made a top two SportsCenter top 10 play with the other one. This was a guy that did not have a great spring.
Yeah.
A guy that we were looking to honestly kind of replace.
Yeah.
Up into midseason.
Yeah.
Still talking about Marquise Siegel.
Right.
And look, that comes a lot from like my NDSU roots, which is a lot of versions of this team. These are the outside corners.
Mm-hmm.
And when we go nickel, sometimes, like for example, Jordan Champion would kick inside, and then I think it was at that time either Jalen Allison or Trey Dempsey would come and play outside corner.
Sure.
But that was it.
Right.
Marcus Williams didn't come off the field.
Right.
C.J. Smith didn't come off the field.
There was the number one dude.
There's no rotation for Jalen Allison.
Right.
He was just out there.
Marquise Bridges.
And Keys.
Yeah.
So, Josh Hayes. Did Josh Hayes come off the field?
Absolutely not.
No. So, like,
he wouldn't let you. He would fight you if you tried to DM him.
100%. So, ultimately, this is just a different way of doing it, and I think I need to stop fighting it and just roll with the punches here.
Yeah, especially when it's not even a thing of we wanted people sat because they were playing poorly. It was, look at this shiny new toy who's not giving up anything. If a corner room has six dudes that are legit lockdown guys, shoot, man, rotate them. My mind has been completely changed on that point because same thing. I grew up where it was the number one lockdown. Even look at the NFL. Richard Sherman doesn't come off the field.
Right.
Darrell Revis didn't come off the field. These dudes, they were number one. But if they're rotating and everybody's keeping everybody shut down, we'd argue.
And Ents made a phenomenal point, which was, look, like they rotate, and I get that like defensive line is high effort, and that's why they go in and out and in and out and in and out. There are reps when you're covering that are 6 seconds of you chasing around a very, very good athlete.
Yeah, and just it's all a mentality thing when you're playing corner of not only like you have to be a legit goldfish, you give up a catch next play, otherwise you'll get burnt again.
Right.
The person you're playing against knows where they're going. You have to read where they're going and then beat them there. It is legit probably the hardest physical position to play on the football field.
Sure. So shout out Destin, not only just for that one amazing play, which will never, ever be forgotten in NDSU lore, but just his entire performance over those 42 snaps was incredible.
Yeah.
17 pressures on Cole Johnson, including, a multi-sack game for Tony Pierce, an extremely athletic play by Eli Moe, start to not allow him to turn the corner, and then really impressive stuff from Javi Derrett as well. I thought that was impressive. Another note I wanted to make was really, really impressed with the right-hand side of the offensive line. They graded out phenomenally well. I thought Mason Miller was excellent at right tackle, and Cordell just does whatever you want. Even if that's, I'm an All-American, I'm probably going to play in the league one day, I'll play right guard for you.
Yeah, he's the most program kid of all time, and it's really good to see, like, there's legit talent on the bench that needs to be on the field, not only with those two, with Mason Miller stepping up. Mason Miller's a guy who needs to be playing on Saturdays in whatever form or fashion you can get him to. Shout out to my guy, man, Big Man Westy. He just keeps showing up and grading out, doing well. He knows his job and he performs well. So shout out to Westerberg. He deserves that opportunity.
Shout out to Logan McCormick as well. Great final play by the captain. That'll be the last thing he ever does in the Fargo Dome, and that's really cool. To force on an effort play, just a 100% guts effort play.
It's a Logan McCormick play.
Right, force that obviously incompletion, terrible throw, squirt out, whatever you want to call it, to end the game and send everybody into a frenzy. Really, really cool for him.
Yeah.
And the final note, and I guess this honestly, Zach, probably could have been put in the grievances or whatever section of what we're doing here. I finally figured out my interaction that went full viral with Ben DiNucci from the 2019 championship game.
Yeah.
When your coach is a punk ass...
Everybody else is a punk ass.
Your players end up being a punk ass.
Yeah.
And that was just an unbelievable. I've never seen a coach just go and make like Twitter mentions style excuses. He complained. Yeah. Not only did his team run a play 5 seconds after the play clock expired, not only did NDSU get hosed with a play clock situation on a 2-point conversion. Like, here's the thing, and I've said this because I got friends. Shout out Matt Leon. I've got friends that are Vikings fans that just complain about the Packers getting every call in the book.
Yeah.
And I'll say this to that and to everyone. Refs have a tough job, but honestly, most of them are just bad.
Right.
It's not a desirable job. It doesn't get the top of the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
But refs are bad for everyone. Like, refs are just... they miss calls.
I don't think people realize that reffing is a part-time job for these people. They are not also, full-time refs.
That also.
Like, it was funny. I was doing a project for my old job, and we looked at Omaha, and, like, Clee Blakeman's a lawyer down there.
Yeah.
Like, the most famous ref right now.
Yes.
Like, Ed Hockley has a insurance for agency, I believe. Like, just stuff. It's not their full-time job.
People miss calls.
And you have to factor in that, like, no game will ever be called perfect. And you can go through and nitpick everyone you want, but I guarantee for every one that you point out that pisses you off, there's three that went in your favor.
Yeah.
And you don't complain about those when you win.
And the other thing, you know, he was very much acting like a Twitter person, too, when he was like, we're on to bigger and better things. You know,
but are you?
But like,
right.
You know, I'm not, you know, it's the...
I want to argue with Cignetti.
It's the classic, like, I'm not laughing. I'm not crying. I'm really laughing. This is hilarious to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The, like, smile face mask, and he's crying underneath.
And I'm not kind of. I literally, you know, when people say they lay awake at night thinking of something, I actually did, like, think about this for probably too long while I was staring up at the ceiling trying to go to bed. I am angry at myself because he being Cignetti, pronouns, pal, he being Cignetti said that the ranking system was arbitrary and that if they would have played Sam Houston in the spring at home, they would have won. He said, what do you think would have happened? He's saying what he's saying.
Sure.
And that if they would have played this game in Harrisonburg, that they, you know, what do you think would have happened? And the response to that, and the response that I've asked him on Twitter, he hasn't responded, but I wouldn't respond to me on Twitter either, is what about James Madison's resume to you was more impressive than North Dakota State's? You did not beat... You played one playoff team on your schedule. You lost to them.
Yeah.
Every other team that you beat... By the way, you have the same record as NDSU. Every other team that you beat was not a playoff qualifier. Mm-hmm. You played a soft schedule. The one playoff team that you played, you didn't win.
Yeah, not all wins are created equal. So sit here and act like they had a more impressive resume is absolutely maddening to me.
Because he probably wouldn't have fought me, but it would have been an uncomfortable situation in the press room after they lost, and I felt like it was probably rubbing it in.
Yeah.
I was this close to just asking, what about JMU's resume would you say is more impressive than North Dakota State's, and why, from an actual resume perspective, do you feel this game should have been played in Harrisonburg?
Patty Ross almost came out.
I just about, right. You know what I mean? But like, that's my point, is that I don't think they're going to have success at FBS until they get rid of him, because that is just a top down. You want to know why DiNucci was a punk ass after the national championship game? Because that's a program of punk asses, and it comes from the top.
Yeah. The fish stinks from the head down. The old saying, and it even goes to their fans, man. They literally are just like speaker boxes that are saying the same thing. So, and whatever. They lost. Go have fun. You can if in one hand and you know what else in the other.
All right. Thank you so much, Zach, for coming on and doing this show. Thank you to Big Deck Barbecue for being the presenting sponsor. And thank you to our other sponsor, Herd and Horns. Go check out Herd and Horns. Thank you all for listening. Have a phenomenal rest of the week. Stay tuned for that basketball show. And go Bison.